brief disclaimer, we're back in the stories of the Olympians, so that means some talk of sexual assault. Please see the post on mythpodcast.com for more info. This week, on Myths and Legends, we're back in the stories of the Olympians with Poseidon, god of the seas. We'll see that the best wingman sometimes isn't even a man. It's a dolphin. And that Poseidon is totally not mad that his younger brother bosses him around all the time because he has a cool car with mandatory dance parties. The creature this time is Alan, a monster from the Philippines who just wants you to not boil its children. This is Myths and Legends, episode 442, The Poseidon Adventures. This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular tales you might think you know, but with surprising origins. Others are stories that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. So, way back when, I pledged to do a year on the Olympians. One a month. It lasted 2 months. Turned out it was way more work than anticipated because not only did I have to research like 20 stories for each of them, but I wanted to weave their life into something that made sense and was a satisfying story arc in its own right. So we're back to my increasingly inaccurately named monthly Olympian episodes with Poseidon. We'll talk about this later, but Poseidon doesn't have a lot of stories where he's the main character, so he's a small part of a bunch of them. Think of this like a chapter from Edith Hamilton's mythology or Robert Graves' Greek myths. Sort of like a grand Poseidon overview. One quick note for listeners who maybe haven't listened to every episode of the podcast or have and just, you know, there's a lot of them. Back in Halloween of 2020, we did a bit where Dionysus, god of wine, revelry, and theater, was in The Frogs, an ancient Greek play, which itself is a metacomedy. So, in a podcast adaptation, Dionysus was doing a podcast. I've brought it up here and there in the Greek episodes as a fun joke, but today it's most of the episode. Dionysus doing an interview of Poseidon's life, with the god of the sea being unable to not step in it. The storm above Dionysus' head began to clear. Ugh, finally. He squinted out to sea and saw a head rising from the waves. The storm retreated quickly from its true master, Poseidon, Olympian, god of the sea, horses, and also earthquakes. As he rose, pulled by white horses with golden manes and brazen hooves, made of brass, they weren't particularly bold. As Poseidon rose, the party, apparently, came with him because when his golden chariot emerges from the sea, according to Homer, sea monsters frisk around it. Frisk, in this context, means to frolic. A few very beleaguered octopuses dragged Poseidon's shell-themed seat across the sand and brought him a bottle of wine. "Well, what do you got?" Poseidon looked at Dionysus, wine streaming down his beard as a tentacle came up to wipe it. Dionysus was already set up with the recording equipment and had captured the noise print to remove the background noise, but yeah, hey, can you shut the music off? Dionysus asked. Poseidon groaned. It really went against his whole thing. He was the party. Dionysus didn't correct him by saying that Dionysus, a version of whom was Bacchus in Roman mythology, was literally the god of partying, and knew that if you had to tell people you were the party and make your employees dance around your car, you were, in fact, not the party. Poseidon yelled out for his sea monster bros to take a quick break. Come back and give him a loose 20. As the sea monsters quickly submerged, Dionysus noted that this was gonna be longer than 20 minutes. Episodes were running long lately. He knew that podcasts took longer to make than just their runtime, right? One, nerd alert, no, I don't listen to podcasts. What is this, 2018 when they were cool for a whole 20 minutes? Two, my guys are fish. They're gonna forget about this in like 3 seconds from now. It's actually a big problem with them forgetting who I am. Dionysus didn't note that the whole thing where fish forget every few seconds is a complete myth, and that Poseidon's guys really seem to be capitalizing on that myth and pretending they didn't know him so they didn't have to hang out, but he did want to get started. Flipping through his notes, he worked his way back to the beginning. Poseidon was the first son of Cronus and Rhea, and the first son to die. At least, that was Cronus' plan. I'm not a doctor, and thankfully I have no first-hand knowledge of this, but generally when you eat people, they don't make it. But little did Cronus know, when it came to Poseidon, his oldest son, he wasn't eating his son, but a foal, a baby horse, and Dionysus raised a finger. Poseidon lowered his sunglasses to reveal another pair of sunglasses. He was lounging across from him on the shell of the beach, where they were having their talk. Yes? Were they sure about this? The foal thing? Poseidon said, oh yeah, the horse thing? My mom, Rhea, replaced me with a horse. And my dad ate the horse. Why? Poseidon asked. Okay, two things. One, apparently you made the horse for people, which is why you're the god of horses. So those kind of conflict. But two, it's just very close to Zeus's story, where when he was born, Cronus ate a rock instead of him, and he grew up and became Cronus's cupbearer, poisoned him so he threw you all up, and then led the revolution. Dionysus could pull out his notes, but he didn't think he needed to. Yeah, so? Poseidon said. So if you were out the whole time, what were you doing? Baby stuff. Watery baby stuff. Why are you making this a big thing? The Arcadians tell a story of me being replaced with a foal. I was out of dad's stomach. I was raised in a pasture with, like, lambs and junk. Poseidon went back to his phone. So you just, what, met up with Zeus later and joined his revolution instead of being rescued from your father's stomach? Maybe he met up with me, Poseidon shrugged. Maybe he joined my revolution. But did he? Dionysus pressed. Maybe, Poseidon smiled. Dionysus rolled his eyes and resumed, all right, foal or baby, leader or not, Poseidon was out of his father's stomach and in the war effort. The Titanomachy had begun, and the Titanomachy ended. We actually don't have a full accounting of the Titanomachy. Did Poseidon want to fill in some of those gaps? Nope, Poseidon said, not looking up. Cool, yeah, this is going well. Dionysus crossed off the Titanomachy section, where the Olympians rose up against their parents' generation, the Titans, overthrew them, and sent them down to Tartarus. Tartarus being the lowest level of the underworld, where, while the regular underworld is full of shades and sadness, Tartarus is full of suffering and screams. Full of the bad people, Poseidon interrupted the narration. When you say bad people, Dionysus continued, I did sort of an inventory of Tartarus, and it's full of the Hundred Handers, the monstrous siblings of the Titans, some Cyclopes, and mostly just enemies of you all. Us, the Olympians. It's kind of our own personal prison. They're only bad insofar as they are a threat to us. Yeah, don't forget people who tricked Zeus into eating people, Poseidon laughed. Happens more than you'd think. Yeah, actually, let's talk about Zeus, Dionysus said. Dividing up the domains, how did that go down? Oh, you mean how did I win and get the sea? Poseidon put his phone to sleep. Is that what happened? Poseidon laughed. What? Did he want the underworld like the sad sack Hades? Oh, my girlfriend leaves me for 6 months a year. Boo-hoo, but I gotta stay here and work. No thanks. Or the sky? You know what's in the sky? A lot of nothing. Meanwhile, I got this big blue watery road that all these little guys use all the time. So much worship flowing my way 24/7, 354. So you didn't want to be king of the gods? You're older than him. King, he might be king of all you guys, but he's my little brother. We're basically equal. Dionysus pointed out that basically equal wasn't quite equal, was it? Well, we drew lots for responsibilities and I won, Poseidon laughed. I love my watery life. I have the sea, horses, earthquakes. Okay, speak on that a little. Why earthquakes? There are some who feel like that should be Hades' domain. Dionysus sat back. Poseidon explained that his domain wasn't strictly the sea. In fact, his epithets included Earthshaker and Earthmover. Poseidon's domain wasn't strictly water. but everything down to the foundations of the earth. As we all know, Poseidon grinned, all land rests on water. Does it, though? Dionysus asked. I should know, Poseidon snapped back. Oh, I'm not denying that, Dionysus replied. Let's say is surrounded by water. Right, sure. So he who controls the water controls the shaking of things that the water can shake, the Olympian shrugged. Also, my trident can shake the earth. Cool, Dionysus looked things over. Okay, and then you got married. Yes, Poseidon replied. Can you give us a glimpse into your love story? Poseidon said, sure. Tale as old as time. She was one of the 50 daughters of Nereus, the old man of the sea, son of Pontus, the sea, and Gaia, the earth. Her mother was Doris, sort of a personification of the fertility of the ocean. So, one day Poseidon was hanging out with Nereus, watching all of his daughters dance. He paused. What was that face for? Nothing. Well, not nothing, Dionysus said. It just sounds weird. Oh, seriously? Poseidon asked. Where was Dionysus' head? People danced for all sorts of reasons, but it just goes to show his bias that Dionysus assumes he's some sort of creep. Dionysus apologized, and Poseidon continues. Anyway, there was a really hot daughter called Amphitrite that I just had to have then and there, Poseidon said with a smirk. Dionysus facepalmed. Thankfully, Poseidon did not act on his feelings. Well, okay, he did act on his feelings, but Amphitrite's sisters managed to warn her in time, swarming the Olympian as he walked toward them. After politely chuckling and nodding to the girls, but desperately searching for the one who had awakened these feelings, Poseidon realized what had happened. Honestly, her running away only made the feelings more intense, Poseidon laughed, not noticing that neither Dionysus nor the production team joined him. So Poseidon sent out the search parties. Amphitrite was smart enough to not hide in the sea or on any of the islands. It said that Poseidon sent out creatures to find her, and while he could have used horses because I guess they were his thing, I like to picture scores of, like, trout and octopuses emerging from the sea and lasting a few hours while they comb the towns and countryside looking for information, for 5 to 30 minutes each before suffocating. But even though many of his fish minions died, that was a sacrifice Poseidon was willing to make. Because he found her. She was in the Atlas Mountains. To close the deal, though, he would need an expert negotiator. We'll see a dolphin climb a mountain, but that will be right after this. We're finally, like, in the place to enjoy fall outside. Moving to our new house, the backyard was nice, but it looked way nicer when we came to the open house with all the previous owner's decorations out there. When we got that old table we have and the two chairs, it looked bad. I'm not a designer, but even I knew I didn't love the one table and umbrella I saw gathering sawdust at the local hardware store. So we got on Wayfair. I want to say less than a week later, and the backyard looks better than it did when we fell in love with it. The linchpin? A few Marazzi double-walled taper pot planners. Try to say that 3 times fast. They look classy, and they add just the right amount of polish to our whole backyard situation. Wayfair is great because they have so much selection across all price points. For real, any budget you have so many options. You get to see what the item looks like from real pictures submitted by real customers, and they have over 20 million 5-star reviews. Also, you can know what you're getting is quality. They've started doing this Wayfair Verified, where products with that designation have been inspected by product specialists for quality, features, and even how long it takes to build. Join Wayfair Rewards today to get 5% back on every purchase and start saving on your next home upgrade. Head to wayfair.com to shop all things home. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home. I've talked about it a little bit, but I have ADHD. Focus during meetings, staying present, engaged, but also keeping what I need to do in mind, it's always been a challenge. Either I'm in the conversation or I'm super locked in taking notes. I wish granola had been a thing years ago, not the delicious snack and breakfast mixture. I knew about that and I do love a good parfait, but granola, the AI-powered notepad built for how people actually meet. So basically, with Granola, you take rough, even incomplete notes, my specialty, but in the background, Granola transcribes the meeting and turns everything into clean, structured, actually useful notes when the meeting is over. No more trying to decode your action items from what are little more than clues you wrote for your future self. You can free up mental bandwidth for actually interacting with people, you know, meeting with them, and still know exactly what was said. I was super surprised after a meeting when I saw that it's all there, the whole transcript, but it really did use my notes as a guideline if I wanted it to. And it was so much more helpful than if I just tried to jot down a few of my quickly fading memories afterward. Best of all, Granola works through your device's audio, which means it works with the video conferencing tools we all already use. No weird bots or awkwardness. If meetings are eating up your day, Granola is a no-brainer. You can try it totally free. Just head to granola.ai/legends. That's granola.ai/legends to get your time back. Try it for free at granola.ai/legends. Yes, he is objectively terrible, the dolphin said to Amphitrite, before waving a fin for her to splash some more water on him. Mammal or no, it was very stressful being out of the ocean long enough to climb a mountain. I know what they're like. The Olympians, Amphitrite said. She didn't want to be with him. If you know what they're like, the dolphin said, and I don't mean this as a threat, then you know that he's not going to stop. He sent me to try to talk to you, because arriving himself would spook you, but he knows where you are. His domain surrounds the earth. His brother rules the skies, and his other the underworld. There's no place to go that he won't find you, eventually. The dolphin waved again for more water. Amphitrite despaired, and the dolphin sympathized. The storm had come for her. That much was obvious. She could rage against it, or she could weather it and come out stronger. I don't know what Dolphin said to her, Poseidon admitted. Dionysus told him not to worry about it. They'd get an interview with her and fill it in and dramatize it. Poseidon nodded. But he came back with a demand from her. Marriage, Poseidon laughed. She wanted to be his queen? Still, he was young and stupid, only a few centuries old at that point, so he agreed to it. Dolphin got to become a constellation. Isn't that normally reserved for heroes or enemies who fought valiantly but failed? Dionysus asked. And you used it on your dolphin wingman? Poseidon nodded. That was heroic. So, married life, Dionysus said. Do you want to comment on Cetus Ethiopius? That is the story of me being a great husband. Okay, so get this. The queen of Ethiopia, Cassiopeia, was talking a bunch of crap about how her daughter, Andromeda, was more beautiful than the Nereids. Dionysus looked up, of which your totally consensual wife was one. Yes, and thank you for adding the totally consensual part. We still actually get in fights about that, Poseidon said, and continued. Anyway, he sent a sea monster, Cetus Ethiopius, to ravage the coastline. Dionysus blinked, and that proved what? That she wasn't as beautiful as my wife, let alone her 49 hot sisters. Do I need to make a diagram? Poseidon scoffed. That would actually be nice, but we won't get hung up on this. What happened next? Dionysus asked. Well, we ravaged the coastline and then flooded the coastline to make more coastline, and then I sent the sea monster Cetus. I'm going to stop you right there, Dionysus said. You can just say Cetus. Cetus means sea monster, so it's like you're saying PIN number or ATM machine or Casa House. It's just redundant is all. At that first bit of pushback, Poseidon sneered. Look, I didn't even want to do the whole Cetus sea monster thing. I'm not saying she made me, but she had her sisters over and they were just on it nonstop about how this woman said her daughter was prettier than them and they wanted me to do something about it and I gave them the advice to get prettier, which did not go over well. A week later, I'm ravaging the coast of Ethiopia because I'm a great husband, or at least trying to be one. Ethiopia doesn't have a coast. It's landlocked, Dionysus pointed out. Poseidon chuckled, ruh-roh, what did I ravage? Nah, but the territories were different back then. Anyway, I was getting bored, so I put it through to an oracle of Amun, later of Amun-Ra fame. He did pretty well for himself, right? That the only way to get it to stop was to let the sea monster see the sea monster eat her. So they chained her to a rock. And then Perseus, Dionysus said. Poseidon chuckled again. Yeah, that guy. Once in a generation hero, all thanks to me. Like I said, I didn't care about the sea monster Cetus, or just between you and me, the stuff the queen said about Andromeda. It was actually the best possible outcome that that little guy, whizzing by in Hermes' flying shoes, spotted Andromeda, cut off his head, and rescued the princess. So you're not mad that he killed your sea monster? Dionysus asked. Poseidon took a drink from his wine bottle. I'm not the human sacrifice type of god. Ugh, yuck. Dionysus scribbled in his notes. So you knew Perseus was out there, and he would help you thread the needle of getting your in-laws off your back while also making it so you didn't actually have to do anything. Well, of course he was out there to kill, Poseidon said, and then stopped himself. Out there to be heroic. So heroic, that one, Dionysus said, not looking up, though he could almost feel Poseidon's self-satisfied smirk. They would get back to that question later, though. So, Poseidon, back to his marriage. The Olympian shrugged. Well, they had a couple of kids. Domestic life, though, wasn't for him. This stallion had to run free. Only so free, though, right? Dionysus asked. Poseidon grew serious. What did his nephew mean? Okay, I've talked to everyone. You had the most to gain from the events. Poseidon cast a nervous glance toward the sky. That was a long time ago. Okay, but what happened to not wanting to be the heavy head that wears the crown? Dionysus mock placed a crown on his head. It was all Hera. I don't know, it was like I was under some spell or something. It started as like some drinks among the gods. We were all complaining about Zeus, just harmless stuff. But the, I don't know, it just, the talk shifted. Hera started putting these just ideas out there, first as jokes, but then it got real. Said there was something in it for me, on my own, that I was the older brother and I was stepped over. She was telling me that I can handle things. I'm smart, not like everybody says. Apparently, I was needed because no one else, not Apollo nor Athena, were as shocked or as outraged by this talk as I was. What happened next? Dionysus asked. What happened next is that we got him, Poseidon laughed and then grew serious. No, but really, I was as surprised as he was. I thought it was all just talk when we overthrew Zeus and chained him up. Little known fact, I was actually working to free him. Thetis, the woman who did, and the future mother of Achilles, she was an agent of mine. I was in deep cover. So deep that there's no record or talk of you being involved in any of the sources, Dionysus noted. I was that good, Poseidon winked. I would tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. All that stuff is off the record, by the way, at least the parts where I act happy are. That's not how that works, Dionysus noted. But you and Apollo were punished, not as bad as Hera, who had to hang naked by her wrists with weights on her ankles, or her son, Hephaestus, who was thrown off Olympus and so brutally maimed that he's the only Olympian who walks with a limp. At least he didn't have to do manual labor, Poseidon laughed. Well, he's a blacksmith, so he does enough of that sort of thing every day. You and Apollo had your divinity stripped from you, and you had to go serve a human king for a bit. That makes it sound easy. Maybe you think it sounds easy, because I was just stating what happened, Dionysus replied. I'll tell you what, though. Apollo had it easy. He just had to tend to the king's flocks. Me, though, I had to build those walls all by myself, Poseidon noted. That being said, though, guess which walls never fell? Troy? Dionysus looked up in surprise, the city that was famously sacked. After a 10-year-long war where my walls kept them out? Poseidon asked. The Greeks only got in because, well, I don't want to talk about why the Greeks got in. Dionysus let that one sit before continuing. Okay, so walls built, then what happened? Poseidon inhaled sharply through his nostrils. Oh, okay. He saw where Dionysus was going with this one. Where am I going? Dionysus asked. I've been following your life story wherever you've taken me. This is just an interview. It's like a puff piece so we can work through these things. After you, it's Hera and Zeus. Do you think I have some sort of agenda? Poseidon crossed his arms. You're trying to make it look like I'm super into human sacrifice. Oh, Poseidon just loves killing pretty ladies. Why? Dionysus met his eyes. Is it because Laomedon, the king of Troy, didn't pay you, and you sent a sea monster to ravage his lands unless he offered his daughter, Hesione, to be eaten by a monster? Poseidon would have Dionysus know that Apollo was doing it too. The son of Leto was livid. He brought pestilence to ravage the land. Dionysus sat back. Pestilence and sea monsters goes together like peanut butter and batteries. I don't know what either of those things are, but sure, Poseidon said. Dionysus noted that, as interesting as all this was, even though it did seem like Poseidon was repeating himself, we've already done a Hercules-Heracles episode, so we don't need to go into that. The only reason it didn't end gruesomely for Hesione was because another once-in-a-generation Greek hero was there to kill Poseidon's sea monster. Yeah, and I look like a peach next to him, let me tell you, Poseidon laughed. He wasn't wrong. Poseidon, for all of his self-reported rage, usually retreated at the first hint of pushback. The Olympian's anger was like trying to light a campfire with a wet sock. It was a little odd, but mostly nothing would come from it except maybe embarrassment. Hercules' anger, though, was like using a flamethrower to light dynamite to start a forest fire. It was explosive and dangerous at first, and grew to be widespread and devastating to everyone and everything in its path. The king of Troy, Laomedon, promised Hercules his daughter, Hesione. Hercules was eaten by this sea-to-sea monster, and after the monster writhed on the beach for 3 days, Hercules emerged from the monster's stomach by taking a more direct, Sigourney Weaver alien-like path. By then, Hesione had been removed back to Troy, and the doors barred behind her. Hercules found out firsthand just how strong Poseidon's walls were and had to make it back to Eurystheus to announce the completion of his ninth labor, getting the belt of the Queen of the Amazons. The yellow sun of the earth gives Superman super strength, but it also increases his intelligence. Hercules, being the son of the greatest Olympian, meant that he was strong in body, in resilience, in grit, and his pettiness was also legendary. For all of his success and renown, he was a man who never once, for a second, let something go. Laomedon learned this when, years later, a half a dozen ships landed outside Troy, and, squinting, saw that murder machine he slated sprinting toward the city. Hercules made it to the doors before they closed this time, and those doors never closed again during Laomedon's reign, because it only lasted about 15 more minutes. Greek history, world literature, and the 2026 summer box office would have been vastly different if Hercules, tearing apart princes of Troy like anachronistic phone books, hadn't been susceptible to Hesione, daughter of the king, and her tearful pleas for him to spare her brother, Podarces. This was enough for Hercules to take a breather and look around. The man who wronged him was dead. 5 of his sons who hadn't wronged Hercules were dead. Smoke rose from the surrounding city. There was restitution and there was retribution, but this was bordering on extermination. Hercules agreed and relaxed. Though kind of knowing that this was exactly how you make an enemy for life, Hercules decided to roll the dice. He had made a lot of enemies, and the last son of a no-name kingdom on the edge of the world would hardly be an issue for him or his people. He couldn't just let Podarces go. The kid would have to be ransomed. Hesione closed her eyes and, with the ashes of the city streaking her face, removed her veil and gave it to Hercules. Podarces had been bought with his sister's life and freedom. From that day forward, his very name would stand to help him remember her kindness and sacrifice, with him changing it to a variation of to buy. He would be known as Priam. Hercules gave Hesione to his friend and fellow invader, Telamon, the king of Aegina, on an island between Athens and the Peloponnese. Her life contained one final tragedy when, years and years later, King Priam of Troy, now the sole ruler of a thriving and powerful city, sent some messengers to Greece to demand the return of his sister. Both he and his sister were well into their twilight years, and the conflict had been so long ago, he simply begged for any time he had left with his only remaining sibling. The messengers returned with nothing, rebuffed by Telamon. Priam felt himself too old and important to the city to make the journey, so he sent his son, a handsome young man, and the only one of his nearly 50 children better with words than weapons. Paris, as we know, did not come back from Greece alone. But he also didn't come back with Hesione. He came back with Helen, Queen of Sparta. Because of the brazen sacking of his city when he was a boy and the abduction of his sister, Priam apparently felt Paris's return with Helen to be justified. It was one woman. What was the worst that could happen? We'll see what Poseidon gets up to during and after the Trojan War, but that will, once again, be right after this. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I knew people liked BetterHelp, but actually being able to see the numbers, it's obvious that people love BetterHelp. I mean, okay, I knew that they have an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on 1.7 million client reviews, but being able to see just a fraction of that is amazing. Really, you can check it out for yourself. Go to betterhelp.com/reviews, and you can see real customer reviews in real time. They're updated every day with literally hundreds of real people saying how much they love BetterHelp. You can scroll and scroll and scroll, and that's just in the past few days. You've heard me talking about therapy in general and BetterHelp in specific and how great it is. And if you're considering therapy, join the over 6 million people who have used BetterHelp globally. Therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience and hold all the required education, training, and certifications. Best of all, BetterHelp makes it super easy to get started. Answer a few questions and get matched with a therapist, just like that. And you can switch anytime if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit betterhelp.com/myths. That's betterhelp.com/myths. Back with Poseidon. Dionysus asked, "So, where did you land on the Trojan War when it started?" Poseidon snorted awake. "What? Were they still doing this? That was a long aside." Dionysus said, "Yeah. Kind of backed the wrong pop culture horse in early July, so trying to make up for it now with the Troy talk. Who knew a nuanced yet thrilling retelling of a beloved ancient story with an all-star cast would be better received than The Rock in a wig and a muscle suit?" "Kind of everybody, I think," Poseidon said. "Sidebar, I'm finally going to go this week to see the Odyssey, so no spoilers, okay?" Poseidon, given his bad blood with Priam's dad, and the fact that the invoice for the wall was still outstanding, sided against the Trojans. "Of course, Zeus told us to stay out of it. Well, told them." Poseidon's hand wave seemed to imply everyone who was not him. "I just popped down a few times. Most importantly was when Hector, the Trojan prince, was about to turn the tide of war. He was burning the Greek camps as they retreated to the sea. I just walked among them, touching their backs and giving them courage. They managed to maintain a foothold and eventually pushed the Trojans back."
Okay, Dionysus said. "Because I actually remember something of a famous confrontation between you and Zeus during the war. Zeus woke and you were fighting for the Greeks, out front, after he ordered the gods to withdraw all help for them so they missed Achilles. So we talked to Iris, the messenger of the Olympians, and she said the message was essentially that he commanded you to get off the battlefield. That if he had to go down there, you better stay out of his reach because he was stronger and would not hold back. She said you talked a lot about being equal and refusing. She asked if you wanted to reconsider. You did. And it ended with you asserting your equality, but capitulating to all of his demands."
"That doesn't ring any bells," Poseidon said in such a way that seemed to imply his head was currently a carillon. "Book 15 of the Iliad?" Dionysus said. Poseidon shook his head. "Can't say I've heard of that one. Iliad? Grilliad? Text me with the title. I'll look into it."
Okay. Dionysus said they didn't need to recount the Trojan War. A decade-long war of attrition where even Homer looked at it and was like, "What if we just jump in the last year and then also still don't actually tell the end of the war?" "We should talk about Odysseus, though," Dionysus said. Poseidon grimaced and fortified himself with a little bit of an entire bottle of wine.
"Odysseus, oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, he's so wily. He uses his thinky-thinky powers to solve problems. How is that manly? That's not what we made those guys for. And also to add insult to injury,
He blinds my son. Dionysus made a show of flipping through his notes. Well, yeah, okay, we should talk about that. Polyphemus, right? When did Amphitrite give birth to him? I must have missed that. Oh, he was actually born to a different woman. A nymph, Thusa, Poseidon said. Was that a common thing? You having children with other women? Nope, Poseidon said. Just a one-time thing. Xanthius? Dionysus turned back to the enslaved man, who also served as his producer. 60 to 70 kids documented in the sources, likely over 100 total, Xanthius said. I meant one-time thing with her, Poseidon smiled. In fact, according to some Romans, Scylla, one of the monsters that menaced Odysseus on his journey, was only that way because Amphitrite discovered an affair and poisoned the spring where Scylla, once a beautiful naiad, bathed. In another instance, Poseidon turned himself into a ram and kidnapped Theophane, taking her to an island where he fathered the ram with the Golden Fleece, the same Golden Fleece that would find its way to Colchis and be the MacGuffin the Argonauts would go after. He fathered the Aloeidae, two giants. When the princess Iphimedia sat down in the ocean, because that's apparently a thing, the giants would go on to storm Olympus and lose. Poseidon claims parentage of Theseus, but that's dubious, given how successful Theseus was. Theseus, too, also didn't just blind, but killed not one, but two sons of Poseidon on his way to Athens. Weird that you would choose this child to get so angry about, Dionysus said and tapped his paper. I mean, yeah, he was blinded by Odysseus, but he also trapped the guy and his men in his cave and was eating them one by one, so... So? He's a cyclops. Are you, like, criticizing my parenting now? Poseidon asked. You don't enter a bear's cave and expect the bear not to attack you. They had it coming. Well, you got him back, right, Odysseus? Dionysus said. He famously never returned home after you decided to make him the object of your wrath. Poseidon clenched his jaw. I decided to let it go. Little guy had been through enough. He was on his last leg, practically broken. Yeah, so broken that he only killed over 100 suitors, most of which were under half his age. Let's be real. You've had a long-standing feud with Athena, who jumped in to champion her case for Odysseus before Zeus. There was a history here. Despite Poseidon's assertions that he was totally not mad at getting the sea, he made several overtures to try to gain control of cities or land in Greece. Athens was the most popular story. Both Poseidon and Athena found themselves on the Acropolis, the highest spot in the budding city, and offered their gifts. Athena, an olive tree, something that required skill, careful cultivation, and planning, but which would yield a bounty year upon year. Poseidon struck the earth and produced a saltwater spring. A spring that, year upon year, would yield saltwater, something they could get at the sea like 3 miles away. In some versions, this was left to the mortals to decide, so it was put to a vote. Men, by and large, I guess, voted for Poseidon. Every woman voted for Athena, and Athena won by a narrow margin. Poseidon threw a tantrum and flooded parts of the city. And, to appease his wrath, the rulers of the city took away women's right to vote in public matters and forbade anyone from taking their mother's surname. In his further territory, I'm not going to say grab because he didn't actually get anything, he lost Aegina to Zeus, Corinth to Helios, Naxos to Dionysus, Argos to Hera. At this point, he straight up refused to show up in front of his Olympian brethren because they were obviously biased and the whole thing was rigged against him. He still lost, though, and dries up the rivers around Argos. He even lost a second one to Athena, a town called Treason, callback to episode 17a, Dionysus said. You can't help but lose to her. Oh my gosh, Athena, yeah, people call me petty, but she's the one with an axe to grind, or a spear, rather. And, like, she just had to keep going, even after committing character assassination with that whole Medusa thing. Shoot, Poseidon said. Dionysus hid his smile. He was the god of theater, after all. So, about Medusa, Dionysus folded his notes. Nope, that was the one thing. My people said it was off limits for this talk, Poseidon pointed. Well, if that's what they said, I didn't know because it was a lot of fish moistening up the documents and gurgling, but you were the one who just brought it up, Dionysus pointed out, and then said, what if I told you we could turn off the mics, just you and me talking? Despite the protests from Poseidon's octopus manager/attorney, Poseidon nodded. Sure, he respected Dionysus and wanted him to know that he wasn't a bad guy. Dionysus turned around. Can we do that? Xanthias gave him a thumbs up. Okay, what happened to Medusa was not my fault, Poseidon said. You raping her in Athena's temple? Dionysus said, arching his eyebrows. Well, you see, there are some nuances in ancient Greek literature where things like ravished and seized or carried off are used, and the concept of we're going to call it what it is, Dionysus said. You know what you did. And that's why Athena responded so strongly. The temple had been violated, polluted by your action. But she couldn't go after you, could she? So Medusa had to absorb even more disastrous consequences of the desecration of a sacred space. Medusa had to become a monster, the Gorgon with snake hair, whose gaze could turn people to stone. You got lucky. Your guilt was turned into a footnote, a story of a hero and a monster. And maybe Athena humiliating you at every opportunity was the way she could hold you to account for Medusa. Poseidon rose and looked Dionysus directly in the eye. Storm clouds formed above him. My guilt. You young ones, where were you when we were fighting the Titans, carving out this world you now claim a right to? We don't have rights. We have to take what we want. I am the sea. You wanted someone to represent and control the uncontrollable, and you got him. Long after the cities are gone, claimed by me, I will be here. So no, I don't conform to any justice but my own. Like the sea, I take. And I don't answer for what I take, especially to people, or Athena, or even my brother. Dionysus shuddered. Ooh, chills. That is good stuff. Wait, for real? Poseidon asked, eyes widening at the first morsel of acceptance from literally anyone he couldn't compel to love him. You like it? Was that good? Oh, chilling. That primal, elemental fury, that's good stuff. Totally flips the narrative on its head. Poseidon gasped. Really? He was going for like a Walter White, I am the danger talk? Nailed it, Dionysus said. Ugh, if only we were recording, Poseidon said. Right? Oh, if only. I can say it again, Poseidon replied. No, I was so inspired, I was taking notes, and we can like recreate it in post, Dionysus said. For real? Poseidon asked. Probably with like AI and stuff. Oh, I love AI. Like, Google my name now, and it's just picture after picture of me completely ripped with waves behind me. That's what the world needs, right? Dionysus fist bumped his uncle, who called up his ride. That exact same picture with subtle differences, like additional abs and fingers, just like 1,000 times a day. Really great what they're doing with that technology. I literally cannot think of a better use for it, Poseidon pointed before turning the music back on. Hey, let me know when this comes out and I'll put it on my socials and all that. The sea monsters floated quietly to the surface, and Poseidon groaned. What were they doing? It's a party. Frisk and frolic. Let's go. They were making him look like a loser in front of the podcaster. Poseidon turned back with a thumbs up and a wink. Stay salty, he said, before sinking beneath the waves. We got all that, right? You kept the mic running like I asked? Dionysus turned to Xanthias, who was already packing up. Oh, absolutely. Even him, like, simpering at the end when I gave him an iota of praise and acceptance, right before he leaves with that ridiculous party persona and all those sea monsters he forces to dance in his entourage. Nice. Poseidon has been a secondary character in many of the stories we've told on this podcast, but there are not a lot where he's the protagonist, and after doing a deep dive into his life story, I can see why. He is deeply unlikable in a way that even Zeus doesn't manage. Zeus, at least, accepts that he's a monster and doesn't harbor illusions about the people in his orbit and his relationship to power. I found the idea of Poseidon being someone who didn't really understand the nature of his own power to be really compelling. Poseidon, to be clear, is powerful. He controls the sea and storms and garnered a massive amount of worship and respect in the ancient world from anyone who needed to safely travel the water, which for a seafaring people like the ancient Greeks was a lot of people. He is respected by the humans. He just isn't loved. His peers respect his standing among the gods, but there's no warmth there. And he keeps trying to win contests that he doesn't understand, with power and pedigree instead of personality, and then throws tantrums when he loses. He fathers and sends monsters to fight heroes without the awareness that monsters in Greek myth exist to be destroyed by heroes. He's the dictator everyone in his sphere of influence pretends to like because they're scared of him, yet openly loathes the moment he's not in the room. The bad part is, he's not a complete joke. He's not pathetic and impotent. He's pathetic and dangerous. Unlike Hades, who also lost to a younger brother and is objectively less loved than Poseidon, Poseidon cares so much, and he takes his wrath about his own insecurities out on the most vulnerable, like Medusa or his many other victims, or anyone who happened to be on the bad side of one of his storms in the Aegean. He's only held to account by Zeus overmatching his power without respect in a few rare instances, and the younger Olympians embarrassing him and outmaneuvering their entitled Uncle P whenever they get the chance, with him never understanding that you can control a third of the world, but you still can't make people like you. Next time on the podcast, I try to keep juicing that summer box office SEO by telling more stories of the original Spider-Man, Anansi, the trickster god from West African and Caribbean folklore. If you didn't know, Myths and Legends has a book coming out. For less than the price of a squirrel picnic table, a tiny picnic table you nail into a fence so you can get pictures of squirrels looking like they're having a rushed lunch break, you can pre-order the first book in our trilogy telling the comprehensive King Arthur legend, where it stays true to the originals but breathes new life into a thousand-year-old story. It also could function as a squirrel picnic table, so two-for-one deal, I guess, but please don't. There are links in the show notes to pre-order. Thank you so much. The creature this time is Alan, from Tingyan folklore, in the Philippines. You wonder how much of Dracula's success has been branding. Would he be as feared if he wasn't some long-dead Eastern European tyrant who lived in a spooky castle? Would it be the same if he slept upside down from trees in the woods, put gold and beads on people, and went by the name The Alan? I mean, you should be equally afraid, because The Alan, well, The Alan will promise to burn down your house. And then they'll make good on that promise by burning down your house. One story has a weary wanderer seeing those winged, humanoid creatures hanging in the woods like bats. He tried to run, but he was too frightened and fell over. The creatures put gold and beads on him and celebrated an easy win. It was probably as close to breakfast in bed as you can get as a giant Batman. The golden beads were part of a funeral rite. But the man summoned the courage to stand up and yell at them to go away. And maybe shocked, maybe bemused, they said, sure. They let him keep the beads, but asked for just one back. He refused. He was keeping all of them. They told him that he was a bad man, and because of that, they were going to burn his house down. And they did. Another story has two travelers spearing a wild pig, but having no fire with which to cook it. One walked until he found a house, and realized he made a terrible mistake when, the door creaking open at the knock, he saw an Alan and her child sleeping inside. Unable to get away without waking her, he told her about the pig, and she lit a torch from the fire under a boiling cauldron. Her sinister face awash in torchlight, she told him to show her the way. She didn't seem unreasonable, though, and lit their fire, telling them that they could split the pig, assuming one of them could go home and feed her child. With a swipe of her fingers, she got rid of any possible other, more threatening reading of that statement when she sliced the pig open and plucked out its liver. Cooking it briefly, she handed it to the man who knew the way back to her house. I've eaten liver once, and it's not something I'm super inclined to do again, but the traveler was starving. Before he made it to the Allen's house, his hands were juicy, but empty, knowing that if he lied to the Alan, she would know her baby hadn't eaten when she returned. He did the absolute worst thing he could think of when he picked up the little Alan baby and dropped it in the boiling cauldron. After telling the mom that the baby ate so well and saying a nervous goodbye to the Allen, the travelers quickly packed up the meat, and the one who, yes, killed the baby Allen, explained what he did to his incredulous friend. They ran as far as they could, about 25 feet, before they heard a scream echo through the forest. Scrambling up a vine into a tree, the Allen appeared below, beside herself with fury that the man had done such a thing. She struggled to get up the tree to get them, and then noticed the vine that the men had left hanging down, the one that they said they climbed feet first, as that was the only way to climb that particular vine. Thinking that it couldn't really be this easy, they were wrong. They chopped the vine, and she plummeted to the ground, dying. They sacked her house of all the gold and beads she had and went home. Aside from everything we've talked about so far, the Allen have the ability to take things like afterbirth or menstrual blood and form them into human children that they raise. What stands out to me is that these things are not bad. They don't actually seem to hurt people, and they seem very fair. Splitting the pig in one story and letting the man keep almost all of the funeral beads they laid out when they thought he was so cowardly that they killed him. Things only turned sour when one kept the bead and the other tossed the child into a cauldron of boiling water. So yeah, give them back their beads and don't boil their children, and you should be fine. That's it for this time. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free, and the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to the other music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.